all of you out there in Radioland, you're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. So much has changed in the world the past couple of years thanks to the pandemic, but some things remain the same. Jefferson County still teems with deer, otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. But like the rest of the globe, Jefferson County and everyone living here faces the gritty reality of 2021. Our mission on Our Town is to introduce you to some of the fascinating people who make up the complex fabric of this community. Listening to Our Town will let you meet some of the vibrant, complex characters who help give this community its unique personality. Our Town's a window on the people of Jefferson County, Washington. The pandemic has hit us all in many different ways, and I'm not just talking about people who actually got sick with the virus. I'm talking about everyone else. Church attendance dried up, stores and restaurants were hard hit, clubs vanished from bridge to photography, family dinners were canceled, kids' sports became an endangered species. Of course, we hope we're coming back from the brink now with the schools reopened. Now you can even show your vaccination card at the door and go to see a movie or get in a restaurant. But there's a whole other sector of our community that's been dealt a gut blow. It looks like at least some of them will never return to the kind of life they had pre-pandemic. As you know, Jefferson County has quite a few artists, artisans, and other creative types. Most of them are self-employed. Many have enjoyed a reasonable lifestyle thanks to their creative output, but the pandemic pretty well slammed the door shut on most creative outlets. Galleries closed, arts and crafts shows disappeared, and no one seemed to be spending money on art. To make it all worse, back at the beginning of the pandemic, the self-employed were not even eligible for unemployment benefits. True, that was fixed. Most self-employed people did receive unemployment benefits for the couple of months when their usual venues for selling art were shut down. Of course, you did have to master the website and the forms involved. Unemployment payments are now drying up. Now, galleries are cautiously opening, but consider, what has the pandemic done to our artistic class? I can't answer that because every creative person is a distinctive individual, but in order to help fill in the answer, I invited one of Port Townsend's longtime creatives to join us today on Our Town. My guest today is Hayden Starbuck of Mystic Beach Studios. Hayden has been a fixture on the creative scene since the early 1990s. I first met her at an arts and crafts show at Port Townsend's Community Center. We were admiring her earrings. So welcome to Our Town, Hayden.
Thanks for having me.
So I usually start my show the same way, by asking my guest if they were born and brought up here on the Olympic Peninsula.
I was not. I moved here after college, but as a kid, we always came up here hiking, and I fell in love with the Olympic Peninsula very early in my life.
So when you were a young kid, I know you mentioned to me the other day you moved to several different places. Can you name a couple of them?
Yeah, probably the big ones would be Berkeley, San Francisco, New York City, and Truckee, California.
Okay, and where'd you go to high school?
Truckee, California, and New York City.
Those are two very different venues.
Yep, I lived off the grid and in inner cities.
Okay, and so the teenage Hayden, what was she like in Truckee and what was she like in New York City?
She was pretty much the same. I would say that her hairstyle and the clothes she wore were rather different, though.
What were they?
let's see, when I left Truckee in the 80s, it was a kind of that pastel preppy thing. And somewhere at the end of my time in New York City, it was kind of cropped, bleached hair with black clothes. Ah. Same person inside, just different look.
Well, it's important for teenagers to fit in with the look, whatever the look is.
Exactly.
So did you have a clear focus as a kid? Did you know what you wanted to be when you so-called grew up?
Yeah, I never had an idea necessarily of what I wanted to be. I I liked being creative, but I think the main thing I knew was I wanted to be in a certain environment. I really loved nature, especially, you know, going from off the grid to big cities. I feel more comfortable in trees. I feel more comfortable by the ocean.
So you weren't a fan of the subways and the nitty-gritty of New York?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. It's got its excitement. It's definitely, there's a lot to offer. But if I had to choose, obviously, I ended up here, right? I choose nature every time.
Now, did you go direct to college after high school?
No, I did a gap year. So I traveled around Europe.
That was good. How'd you get the money for that?
You know, that was back when, was it People's Republic was going? It was an airline that was like $99 or something. So because I didn't want to go straight to college, my dad got me a one-way plane ticket and just sent me to Europe and would send me like $300 a month or something. And I just traveled around and kind of...
That sounds great.
Yeah.
What sticks in your memory the most?
You know, one of the funny things that we did not talk about the other day was I realized it would be really easy to just disappear.
Yeah.
Just lose touch with your entire life and start over. But the long-lasting thing that stuck with me was spending so much time in art galleries and museums and really looking at and absorbing the work that people were doing. And, you know, I didn't get exposed to that in school.
Yeah, so you came back, and did you go to college then?
I did. I spent a lot of time wandering around through community colleges before I went to university. Started in cooking, because I've always enjoyed cooking, and wandered through anthropology and other stuff, and ended up in art and art history. Yeah.
And were you already making some of your own art during that period of time?
I've always been a writer. I've always been a photographer. I think I did some jewelry in high school, but nothing specific, no.
So how did you happen to end up in Port Townsend?
My folks moved here years ago, and I had been visiting off and on, of course, over the years for holidays and stuff. And after I got out of school, I wanted to go into the woods and make art. And my dad had woods, so I came here.
That's great. And so he generously let you stay with him?
I think I only stayed with him for a month or two. Yep. Found another situation.
Good, good. And what were you doing to pay the rent, support yourself?
My first job in town was at the Salal. I cooked at the Salal. Mm-hmm. Yep. Then I became a farmer at Collinwood. I can't remember the order of things now, and worked at Folklore and all sorts of odd jobs around town.
So you said you arrived in Port Townsend in 1991. Is that correct?
Something like that. I go more on the my age versus years.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. And so you were doing various odd jobs, you say,
yep,
for a long period of time? Was there anyone that you stayed with for a chunk of time?
Probably the longest I worked anywhere was Artisans on Taylor, back between when it was a co-op and when it boiled down to one owner, Andrea Garino.
So you're in Port Townsend. At some point, you created Mystic Beach Studio. When was that, and how did the name happen?
Yeah, that was about the time... I'm so bad with linear time. But it was about the time with Artisans on Taylor. My first partner and I split up, and I just got tired of working weekends and minimum wage or below minimum wage under the table, and figured I might as well just start doing my own thing. So... just went for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. At some point, you just go for it. And the business name came because I have a favorite beach where I find fossils. And I was falling asleep one night, and I thought, oh, I should just name my business after my favorite beach, since I started using beach rocks mostly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And how has your business evolved from the 90s onward?
Yeah, it's been an adventure for sure. As my body gets older, happens to us all, my work has definitely changed. And it just as you settle into something, your work changes. But I also took up fiber at some point. So I'm not just doing jewelry, I'm doing fiber as well. And I ended up with alpaca and llamas and pygora goats, all fiber animals. So I use a lot of my own stuff.
One point in your career, you were also an artist model, correct?
Yeah, that was way before Mystic Beach Studio.
Ah,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. I still can't remember the name of them, but the group of people that work out at the fairgrounds. Huh. I worked with them for a long time.
This is maybe an oddball question, but do you ever happen across a piece of art that has you as the subject?
I haven't recently, but I don't get out much anymore. Well, but yeah. they're out there for sure.
Yeah, it just would be interesting. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So jewelry was your main thing until you got into fiber.
Yeah, I started in basket weaving, and then I discovered people pay more for silver than they do for twigs. Okay. So I naturally evolved. I'll make whatever I'm out of and whatever's selling. I'm flexible. I just need to pay my bills.
Okay. And you mentioned your animals. Do they actually live on your property?
They all have at some point. When my most recent partner and I split up, he kept the alpaca and llama because he has more acreage than I do. And I kept the goats.
And goats, I know, eat grass. And mm-hmm. do alpacas too, but it's their diet.
Yeah, I basically have a lovely piece of forested land with no undergrowth. They just took away everything below.
Well, that's very handy.
Oh, it is and it isn't. I'm on Cook where that huge development's coming in, and I kind of wish I had some of my undergrowth so I didn't have to look at all of what's going on. But
I think there's going to be a lot going on there based on what you can see from the street, which isn't a lot except bulldozers at the moment.
Yeah, a lot of empty land.
Okay. So let's just sort of bring us up closer to the beginning of the pandemic, right? Right before the pandemic, let's say the year or two before. Mm-hmm. Give us a snapshot of what your business was like and what your life was like.
The glory years. you know, at that point, I just settled into a lovely rhythm. My work is mostly seasonal, and I take a few months off a year to kind of reinvent myself or explore a new medium, and I narrowed down the shows that made me the happiest and brought me the most money, and it was good.
Okay, well, describe a year. Describe the pattern, like, and what are some of the shows that really worked for you?
Oh, all the studio tours, the Port Townsend one, the one in Kingston, Art in the Woods, which is next weekend, Bainbridge Island studio tour. Yeah, those are my favorites.
I'm a little confused by that because I had the vague impression that the Bainbridge Island studio tour was restricted to Bainbridge Island artists. Is that not true?
They fill it up with Bainbridge people first, and if there's leftover, then they let other people in.
Really? Interesting.
But the thing is, Bainbridge is expensive. There's not a lot of artists on Bainbridge.
That's true. I have a friend who used to live there. Who
exactly.
Became her rent became, let's just say, not acceptable. And what about the little shows? Do those net much like the, you know, the arts and crafts fairs around town?
I think the main thing about those of us that do art shows is we're gamblers. We have, I mean, there's more or less an average, but you never know. Yeah. I mean, send in a big windstorm or some big pandemic or something. Right. You know, you never know.
I never considered the economics of the whole thing until we were talking the other day. You don't just get to show up and claim your turf. You have to, sign up? I mean, is there rent? How does it work?
Oh, yeah. Every show costs money up front. Some you apply for a year in advance, which is a little crazy. You know, like the Bellevue ones or the ones across the water that I used to do. And cost money to show up, and you got to have time while you're there. So whatever price you've got on your piece, you've got to consider that you've got a shop. You've got to pay yourself an income.
So we're still talking pre-pandemic here, okay? Mm-hmm. What would be the price range? You know, just what are we talking about for an individual to do it?
Oh, God, it runs the gamut. So the farm tour, I spend $10 to show up for the weekend.
Okay.
A show in Seattle might be
$800. Wow.
So, or more. There's shows out there that are more, for sure. I'd stop doing those ones. Yeah. So I think at this point, the most I spend is $350.
Huh, interesting. And so you have to pay that up front before you're even there.
Yeah, and some shows do a percentage. So you pay a lesser booth fee, but then you also pay a percentage. And you sit there all weekend just kind of watching the numbers and hoping it all evens out.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a pretty rough, potentially rough lifestyle.
But it sounds like that you were doing well.
Yeah. I mean, you can work part-time for minimum wage and barely subsist, or you can work for yourself and do the same and make more.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully make more.
Yeah, okay. And so then the pandemic. When did you first get inkling of the pandemic? What happened for you personally?
Yeah, well, obviously we're watching the news, wondering if it's going to stick to China or wander around and hit us. And I was working the Port Townsend Gallery 9 on March 17th, and I was watching the governor on my laptop, and right then he's like, we're closing. So
wow,
that was it.
I know I happened to be watching the news at home, and it was the national news, and they were focusing on the fact that the bars were closing on St. Patrick's Day.
Holy cow. You know?
And they had people in Boston, I think it was, could have been New York, but I think it was Boston, carrying on about how terrible this was.
It's end like, of the world.
And so Gallery 9, where you were, obviously shut.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Everything did.
Did sales just terminate? Is that what happened for you?
Yeah, when you close your doors, that's what happens.
Because you didn't really have any other outlets.
You know, I made it through the recession great. I altered my product, but there's not a whole lot I can do when I can't get my product in front of people.
So did you apply for unemployment?
There wasn't unemployment at first,
right.
So I spent the first month or two wandering around every single website, every single bit of information I could find, applying for grants. 99.999% of those I never heard back from.
Wow.
I did get, obviously, the rest were rejections. So,
did you ever end up getting any of those grants? But you did get unemployment.
We did finally get unemployment, yep.
And has that terminated yet, or is it
Oh, yeah, no, it's been gone a while.
It's gone, okay.
Right. Oh, my, I just have to say to all the government agencies out there, thank you so much for doing that. That would have been disastrous without that support.
Yeah.
Disastrous.
Okay, so there you were. We're talking March 17th, 2020. Your business is dead in the water. You've got to start thinking, what am I going to do now? So tell us what your thought pattern was and what did you do?
I looked down the road and I figured at least a year. I'm saying at least now. At that point, I said a year, but obviously it's been more than that.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, you don't often in life get the chance to have all of this free time. And I just thought, obviously the business I'd created wasn't pandemic proof. So what can I do now? What can I do with my time? So only so much you can drink and sit around playing solitaire, right? So
right.
I gave myself a project and I started a new business. But at least it mentally got me through tough times.
So tell us about your new business.
Yeah, so it's called Creatrix Compass. You know, I just figured out the thing that I know best is how to kind of pivot when the world throws you oddballs, because we did move so much when I was a kid, reinventing myself and whatnot. And my main interest in life is creativity. So I thought I will just build a business around offering opportunities for people to tap into their creativity. And it's been so much fun. We're not totally off the ground. It's not, you know, highly successful and paying for itself yet, but
it
has a great potential.
Well, it sounds interesting, but I don't think you described it enough so that our listeners can really understand what you are actually doing.
Yeah. Okay. So I have classes and coaching, and I have a creativity podcast. You know, creativity's hard. If you're teaching painting, people don't need you to describe that. Hold the brush, get the paint, put it on the canvas. Creativity is the next layer down or up, if you like. It's how we do so much of what we do. Yeah, it's hard to describe, for sure.
Okay, well, you mentioned classes.
Mm-hmm.
Classes are a tangible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Describe a class, one that you have,
that people
might sign up for if they knew about it.
And people do, and they do. Yeah, so I've got a class that I created for some friends about making your own oracle decks. So I lead them through the whole process of putting it all together, publishing the works. And, you know, that has a lot of design elements to it that people don't, you know, if they're not naturally in that world, that it's good for them to have that kind of leadership, that help. I've got a class on writing that I haven't finished yet that I'm working on, a class on photography that I haven't finished yet. But I'm not doing just photograph the can. I'm looking for the story behind the work. That's an interesting thing to describe.
So those classes are in development right now?
One is up and two are in development.
Okay. And if someone heard about it and they wanted to sign up for it, where would they go?
The website, www.creatrixcompass.com.
Okay.
And there's also a self-led class. It's called Awaken the Artist Within, where I just took movement and sound and writing and just everything I could think of, a whole mix of stuff. There's prompts for every day. It's a four-month class. And just go out and open yourself up to creativity.
And so the classes that are up and ready for registration, how much does it cost?
The self-led one is $44, and the other one, to be honest, I don't remember. I'm the kind of person that once I finish a project, I set it aside and move on to the next one.
The class is sort of in the can. It's not an active you getting up there and on Zoom or something and or on a podcast.
Yeah, the Oracle class, Oracle Deck class is interactive. I participate with people. The other one, no. They do it on their own. I wanted to offer different price points.
Okay.
So for $44, I'm not going to show up on Zoom regularly.
No, it would take a lot of people in your class.
That's the bread and butter class, you know?
Yeah.
Do it on your own.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Okay. And how are you trying to get the word out about this?
Yeah, well, there's all that social media stuff. I mean, I had to learn so much about having a virtual business. It's crazy. But it's just like Port Townsend. It's all about networking. So you get online and you meet people and get to talking and find out what they want and what they don't want. And if you can serve each other, or if you can cross-pollinate your businesses. And one of the ways that is really comfortable for me is my podcast.
Okay, give us an example of what you have on your podcast. You told me about two local people who you've done podcasts with. Why don't you do a brief synopsis?
Yeah, so the podcast is called The Curious Creatrix. And for me, the emphasis is just sort of unveiling what creativity looks like from the inside. Because I think a lot of people think that they are not creative, and they are. So I have a whole host of people, but the two I decided to focus on today are Todd Dubay. He's a local quilter who does not sell his quilts, but he does these beautiful quilts and is really deep into the community. And he's also a videographer, so he does sort of stop-action photography, and you can watch a quilt being made within minutes, seconds. So it's called Quilting in the Fast Lane. I don't know what project he's working on now. He's always got something going. And the other one is another artist from Gallery 9, Karen Lee Eaton, and she's a photographer. And we talked about her taking pictures of the night sky and just all that's involved with trying to, you know, capture the beauty and wonder of nature. So.
At this point in time, the new business, it sounds like it's not financially turning the corner just yet.
Does any new business in the first year?
That's true. No. But, okay, so now we are reopening. It appears we're reopening the galleries and whatever. Are you bringing back the other side of your business, the jewelry making and the fiber art? Is that back on the table?
I did two shows this summer. I've got two coming up this month, and we'll see. My crystal ball is working about as well as everybody else's.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am going to try and get that business, a website, get up so people can. It's something I never wanted to do before. I always preferred selling in person, but maybe it's time.
Well, you have a, you know, engaging sales type personality. So you mentioned you were going to be doing two upcoming shows. Where are those shows?
Oh, yeah. So I have to think Art in the Woods is this coming weekend. And a one-day show in Indianola the weekend after.
Okay. Okay. When we were talking the other day, you said something that really struck me, and I just want to repeat it. You said, in some ways, I'm like Peter Pan. I've been semi-retired all my life. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. Back when I was modeling for the group at Quimper, I just looked around and I thought, this is so cool. I mean, it's midday. These people are here drawing. They're doing what they love. And you know, I'm fresh out of college. It's like, I still haven't figured out what I want to do with my life. And for the record, I'm in my 50s and I still haven't figured it out. But I just thought, I like their lifestyle. I like what they're doing. Granted, they'd all had jobs and they were older and they were retired at that point. But I've kind of based my lifestyle on not putting work at the center, I guess, and just taking the time to enjoy the fact that we live someplace really flippin' beautiful and
go
out and love it.
Getting toward, you know, sort of my natural ending of the show, which is, you know, you've been here for 30 years, roughly speaking, and it sounds like you're still in love with Port Townsend. And why?
I'm a plant girl, so I fell in love with the plants when we'd come up here hiking as a kid, and I still love them. I love the birds and I just love it all. I think it's beautiful.
And you've never had any desire to move to a big city or anything like that?
Why?
Okay. So, your crystal ball for just a moment. Artistic class, you think they're going to make it back in the numbers we had, or you think there's going to be a lot of fall off?
You know, we evolve. Humans evolve. I think it will just change. The art world was already changing before the pandemic. New people were coming in. New types of shows were happening. New types of art were, you know, upcycling. And just things change. That's what they do. And I've always felt like I was on the tail end, one of the babies of the particular art wave that we already had going. Because a lot of younger people weren't doing the same shows that I was doing. And a lot of the other people were aging out. So it was already shifting.
Sort of a dramatic shift, though, this time with the pandemic.
This one's a little more extreme than I think any of us were prepared for.
Right.
For sure.
Well, Hayden, thank you so much for being on the show. We're basically out of time. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Hayden Starbuck, one of our creative spirits who's been hanging on through the dark days of the pandemic and, in fact, launched a new business and is moving forward. In addition to thanking Hayden for being guest on the show, I also want to thank Sonny Flores, the editor and producer of Our Town. He's a technical whiz. He's going to use digital magic to clean up what we're saying, make us sound so good, so eloquent. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ 91.9. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. So, listener, stay safe, stay healthy. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Sonny Flores.